ESPN 97.5.
KFNC and 97.9 HD2 Mont Bellevue, Houston. Presented by Zadok Jewelers.
Houston standing by. Over.
Jeremy and Joe starts now.
On ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
Live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Jeremy Branham and Joe George.
Hello, Houston. He's Joe. I'm Jeremy. We're Jeremy and Joe. Ryan's behind the glass. Both of y'all look nice.
Thanks. So do you.
Both, not really.
You got a polo on.
Both of y'all are dressed professionally. I'm not used to this from you two. Something's awry. I can sense it.
Mine's pretty easy to explain. I had to pack for a 9-day trip, and all my shorts and shirts are in the suitcase.
To be honest, that's my exact reason as well.
That's what you just told me.
I'm going on vacation on Friday, and I'm already packed, and there's a lot of laundry to do.
So you packed all your not nice stuff and wearing your nice stuff, bro.
Yeah, pretty much. but to be fair, I have been dressing nicer a little more often.
That's been a priority of yours?
Yeah. Well, this came up on the show like a month ago. But yeah.
I think I missed it.
I don't remember that.
You were there. You commented.
So what's your mindset here? What's your?
I just want to feel better.
Okay. Dress for the job you want?
Not so much that, because I was dressing for the job I want.
Okay. Just feel better. It helps your psyche.
Yeah, exactly.
You can't wear the CJ Stroud shirt anymore, so he's got to.
That's part of it, yeah. It.
He's been bullied into not wearing
it? No, CJ sucks.
That was a self-punishment there.
Oh, okay. Yeah, there is something to that, though. You know, feeling good. What did Deion Sanders say?
Look good, feel good, play good. Yeah.
Look good, feel good, play good. That's what Brian's
look
doing.
Look good, feel good, play good.
Okay, there you go. That's pretty much, I think that's what Brian says to himself when he looks in the mirror every morning.
He just yells it at himself.
Yeah.
Top of my lungs. Yeah.
I appreciate it. Yeah. It's a good look. You look sharp.
Thank you, Joe.
You look sharp.
Thanks.
Looks good. Looks good on you guys. Lots to get to today. Blockbuster stuff happening in the NFL.
Yeah,
Keith from LA is so happy today. I know it is. I know he's so happy. He hasn't even texted in yet, but I can sense it. It's like telekinesis between Keith from LA and I. I bet you he is just absolutely over the moon.
Yeah.
Rams trading for Miles.
Don't blame him.
Yeah, we'll get into that a little bit later. AJ Brown might be traded at any moment. We'll get to that later. Some Texans stuff. They'll be on OTA. The Texans, not to be outdone with all the transactions today. Texans made a move. Literally just now made a move.
Big move.
They have released City Sal.
Ugh.
City Sal, City So, not matter.
We know that guy.
He started that one game.
I do. I just want to play the drop.
It's fair.
He is no longer a Houston Texan.
Had his five snaps and then was yanked from the game.
Right. He was yanked.
Might have been one of the worst offensive linemen I've ever seen play
football. He went from like practice squad to starting to yanked mid-series.
Yeah.
Mid-series.
Landry said he was getting reps at tackle last week.
Well, he's getting reps on the couch. What he's going to be getting reps at.
He gone.
He is out of here. So, yeah, we'll talk some Texan stuff a little bit later. Willa Bits, if we get around to it. We are watching college softball.
We are.
At the moment. This is an elimination game. Winner goes to the Women's College World Series Final.
Okay.
You almost said World Cup, didn't you?
No.
Okay.
I didn't.
Sounded like it.
I did. Oh, that's a nice little chopper down the line. Texas and Tennessee. Texas Tech has a chance to do it later. They take on Alabama. I think they just have to win once.
Okay.
Texas had to win twice today. I think Tech only has to win once tonight against Alabama. I think the winner goes on to that one. Regional baseball, we'll be watching that a little bit too, because today's Game 7 Monday in regional baseball. So we'll be watching some of that as well, although we can't bet on any of these things.
We cannot.
So we're going to have to figure out a sweat of the day, because there is nothing.
I think our only option is
nothing going on of what we can bet on.
First inning, Tigers, Rays. The game's at 5:40.
Yeah. We'll look. If you have any ideas, suggestions, we'll look during the break. We have to figure out our sweat of the day because we haven't done it yet. We did have an outstanding week last week, though, over 4 units.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what we're at now on the year? Just over 7 units.
There we go.
We're having a year.
We're having a year, boys.
Let's continue to have a – let's heat up in the summer. Let's win even more as today starts June, which is a great month.
It is a good month.
I like June. June's my birthday's in June.
Then it's a good month.
We begin, though, with good, bad, ugly from the Astros weekend. Bad, ugly. The Astros dictate what we start with. If they lose the series, we start bad, ugly. If they win the series, we start good. They drop 2 of 3 against Milwaukee. We start with the bad and the ugly. Joe, take us through yours.
All of them?
Yeah, I don't like going around the horn, actually. I don't think it really – I think it's better if you wipe out the slate. Wipe out the slate, wipe out the slate, wipe out the slate, and then we'll, you know, be done with it.
Okay, well, I think from a big picture, just losing the series is a series that you should have won.
That's a bad.
Yeah, you should have won on Friday night. You should have taken down the Milwaukee Brewers. Sunday's a different animal because Mizorowski's on the mound, but you should have won this series. They were well in position to do so, so I'll start there.
We can.
Oh, okay.
We'll go ahead and pull back the onion.
Sorry.
We'll we don't have to blow right through these.
You're changing the show.
No, we did this last week.
No, you weren't here. Oh, that's true.
We did last week, but I thought it was just because it was really just.
I don't really like going around the horn on these.
Okay.
It feels very itemized. I feel like you should hit your point. Let's talk about the point.
All right.
Let's sink our teeth in.
Should have won the series.
They should have won the series, and you're right. That was my top bad and ugly actually as well. Was that. I have no problem losing yesterday. Miz is on the mound. The Miz has been nasty. He's the best pitcher in baseball going this month. The hottest thing going. He throws 103 every single pitch.
Which,
my goodness. So he's a stud. You don't expect to win that game. There's a lot of good that came from yesterday's game. We'll get to that a little bit later. Good, bad, ugly. But where it really cost you was the one on Friday, because that was a game that you should have won. And there was four reasons that you lost that game. Four time. The four horse. Why Joe Espada falls in love with this, and I don't get it. He falls in love with his late game defensive replacements. And I get it at some spots. Like if you have, you know, a Jabroni in center field and Jake Myers needs to come into the game, I get it. If you have Esoc at third base and like, hey, he doesn't have great lateral, hit him with that lateral movement. If he doesn't have great lateral movement, you want to bring in a Nick Allen. Jose Altuve, if he's playing, if he's healthy, you want to bring in a Nick Allen. But you always have to weigh, and I feel like a bunch of managers do this, and Joe Espada is really bad at it, is that I don't think they have a proper balance and proper ratio of the pros and cons, of the risk-reward. Because I'm all for a good late-game defensive replacement. I love me a glove, all right? But do you really need a slightly better left fielder in left field in Houston with the Crawford boxes? Is Bryce Matthews so much better of a left fielder than Taylor Trammell that he has to come in a one-run game with the short porches? I don't think that he does.
Is he better than Taylor Trammell?
I think he's a better defender than Trammell, yes. Okay. I don't think it's substantial.
Especially, as you said, in left field, it's not enough to take Trammell out of the game.
And it gets marginalized whenever you're playing left field.
Yeah.
It gets marginalized even more when you're playing left field at the Crawford boxes at the Dyke, our favorite stadium in baseball. So, like, there was a reason, like, okay, I don't love that. How did that impact the game? Well, Bryce Matthews came to bat with the bases loaded, one out, and Bryce Matthews' strikeout rate is through the roof.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, okay, there's one example. They're two, really. Joe Espada, defensive sub. Bryce Matthews, the striking out, the bases loaded, one out. Jake Myers and his puny Mickey Mouse Little League arm was the 10th inning, right? The 10th inning with the Manfred man. So he catches the ball. Christian Yelich challenges his arm because he doesn't have a good arm. Shockingly, Jake Myers is a good pitcher in college baseball at Nebraska. Maybe it was the labrum thing whenever he injured the labrum in that playoff game. But Jake Myers' puny little arm allows Yelich to move over. Then they're able to score on a sacrifice fly to right. Would have been out of the inning if Jake Myers had an average arm.
Mm-hmm.
But Christian Yelich took absolute liberties with the puny arm that is Jake Myers. And then in the bottom of the 10th, it's hard to be really mad about Yordan Alvarez because Yordan Alvarez is the best hitter on the planet.
Yeah.
But Yordan Alvarez failed to execute a Branham. He failed to execute a Branham in the bottom of the 10th. What is a Branham? A Branham's when you move the runner over and don't get credit for a sacrifice. Runner at second base. Yordan doesn't move the runner over. Should have been at third base. Walker the very next pitch, or very next at bat. I don't think it was the first pitch of the at bat. Flies out to deep right field. Runner would have scored. But because Yordan didn't execute a proper Branham, the runner's at second base. So those were the four reasons they lost on Friday, and that was the real killer. You were probably not going to win yesterday.
I would throw a fifth reason in.
Okay, let's hear it.
Because they were up 4-3 going into the eighth. Brian Abreu comes in
and has two back-to-back
four-pitch walks, and the Brewers are able to score the tying run without getting hit.
Yep, that was my next on my list was Brian Abreu.
That performance. I combined two of my four reasons. That was my fourth reason. I forgot it. Thank you for the pick me up there, Brian. That's what we do on the show.
We pick each other up.
Yeah. Well, you got credit for it though.
Yeah. Oh,
you got credit. So that's not a full. Yeah. That was like a sacrifice.
You're right. That makes sense.
That wasn't a Branham.
I'm really starting to understand what a Branham is now.
A Branham's pretty much what should be a sacrifice, but you don't get credit for the sacrifice.
Yeah.
Yordan actually had one on Saturday.
He did.
Yeah. I praised Yordan for Branham. You know, he's got all these home runs, fastest Astro to whatever. all these RBIs. Like, he's on an MVP. You know what his most impressive accolade is this year? The Branham he got on Saturday. It outweighs everything else from that. But, yeah, Brian Abreu was putrid in that game. He was so bad.
Yeah.
In that game.
Just couldn't find anything.
And look, that goes back to Espada, though. That goes back to Espada. Like, and Joe, you mentioned this last week. You're kind of on Team Espada here.
I said I wanted to see what it looked like with Brian Abreu in a clutch situation.
Yeah, you wanted him in a high leverage situation.
I wanted to see what it looked like.
Joe Espada was simpatico Joe's over here.
And it looks bad. So now I don't want to see it again.
That's the thing. You can't, like, people were trying to cut him. Like, people were trying to cut him after the game on Friday. Let's pump the brakes here. Prior to this year, and I get, you know, it's what you've done for me lately. I get it. But Brian Abreu, when he's right, he's one of the best relievers in all of baseball. You don't cut Brian Abreu. But what you do whenever he's not his best form is you stop using him in leverage situations.
Yeah.
Don't use him in leverage situations. Joe Espada, I thought, managed a poor game on Friday. His usage of Abreu in a one-run game, the marginal defensive replacement in left field that came back to bite him right in the hiney. Yeah, that was a bad loss on Friday. Unfortunately, that was the reason they lost the series.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to crush them for Sunday.
But
it was uncompetitive still.
See, actually, I thought they were decent.
Paredes made hard contact every time he was up.
I thought that they had a decent approach against the Miz.
Smith hit a liner right at the center fielder. Like, they were making decent contact.
They had runners in scoring position. Yeah. They made them sweat a little bit. They made them work a little bit. Like, I actually don't hate their off. I know they didn't score. I don't hate their offensive performance. Yeah, I mean, yesterday.
There was one really uncompetitive at bat.
There's always going to be with the Miz.
What was DeCenzo doing? I think it was the eighth inning.
Another, like, why are you pinch hitting him?
You know what I think it was? He swung at was unbelievable.
You know what I think that was, though? That was one of the old Dusty Baker play a guy before they're sent down, in my opinion. Hmm. Dusty Baker would always play a guy the game before he got sent down.
He's the move for Hader?
No, he can't be the move for Hader. I think he's the move for Lopefito.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, they already sent down Van Wy today.
Yeah. Why did they do that? Van Wy, did they do that? I think that was a DeCenzo, hey, you're going to Sugar Land. Here's your final big league at bat for a little bit.
Yeah, it's still 9 strikeouts from 1-4 in their lineup on Sunday.
Not bad. Not bad. Have you seen Mizurinski's?
Have you seen Mizurinski's
strikeout percentage? It's through the roof.
Yeah, I mean, he's nasty.
I thought they did all right. All right, 713-780-ESPN. Just getting started. We got one through one bad. I'm sure there's several more. We'll get to some goods a little bit later because there was some good. Yeah, they dropped 2 of 3. We don't do moral victories around here, but there are some good that we have to discuss. We'll get to the big news in the NFL a little bit later. We'll get to some text and stuff a little bit later. We'll be, you know, get off my lawn guys a little bit later as well. 713-780-3776, the HR&P listener line. You can watch us on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. Allegedly, we never see him, so we don't know. YouTube, ESPN Houston. TikTok, ESPN975. Twitter as well, ESPN975. Joe's at Joe George Radio. Brian's at Sack by BMAC. I'm at Jeremy Branham. It is Jeremy and Joe on ESPN975.
1976, D&M Leasing opened their doors with one mission: making a vehicle easier, smarter, and more affordable than buying it the old-fashioned way. 50 years later, that mission has not changed, and they can help you get into that brand-new lease vehicle in the next 24 to 72 hours when you give them a call at 713-290-1000 or visit them at dmautoleasing.com. When you're on the website, you can see all the inventory that you can choose from: Hondas, Fords. They got it all there on the website, and it's really a simple process, honestly. When you qualify, you can get payments for as low as $400 a month, and they'll bring that car right to you, to your home, your office, if you're out at lunch, and they'll take your trade-in vehicle as well. Give them a call right now, 713-290-1000, or visit dmautoleasing.com.
You're listening to Jeremy and Joe
on ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
Live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Jeremy Branham and Joe George.
Junkie's asking, can y'all play La Chona for City So? You are out of here. I don't know. We don't really use that for a cut. We usually use The Undertaker.
Yeah. Feels a little mean.
I mean, did that not? We're not really kind on this show.
It doesn't feel as mean.
I don't think that's like what we're known for. Is like it's our meanness.
Bill's kind of like killing him off. It's more than kicking him out.
Yeah.
I feel like the death bell's meaner. Right?
I think so.
I think so.
Yeah?
I think so. But that's kind of what we play for, like the death of an athlete in the city. We don't eject them.
Yeah.
I don't think I want to do that, Junkie. Sorry. You're going to have to warn an ejection.
Junkie?
Which we saw a lot of ejections over the weekend. That was fun. Regional baseball is the best.
What a mess.
Junkie, St. John's beat Florida State and Tallahassee to advance. That was a weird regional. They had a bunch of rain, pushed everything back. That was actually game six today, the Red Storm advancing to the Supers, I think for just the second time in program history.
Nice.
You don't see a lot of great collegiate baseball in the Northeast.
Not really, I would imagine.
UConn's good.
Okay.
And maybe end of conversation. So congratulations to St. John's. It's really good. The Johnnies. Junkie says bad. I blame Chet Holmgren. I don't know how, but he is somehow responsible for the Astros losing two out of the three this past weekend. Not a bad call. We'll get into that a little bit later as well. All right, what are the bads you got here, Joe?
I mean, Isak Paredes, like not a, I mean, yesterday was improved, but obviously.
Incredibly racist here.
What?
How could you put Isak on this list?
Because he had an 0-for-5?
Isak had three liners against the best pitcher in baseball yesterday, and yesterday became the first Mexican-born player with 500 career hits.
He didn't.
And you're putting him on your bad list?
He didn't exactly seem thrilled to even answer that question.
Snapped void. The Miz's streak going back to April of not allowing an extra base hit.
Yeah, right? Void that one.
Okay.
Void.
And two of his other outs were screaming liners that just happened to be at someone.
Yeah, Bauer's made two really good plays on him.
I'm a little surprised. I feel like I know like hard contact is important. I didn't think you guys would care that much.
I like exit velo.
We love some barrel rate.
Plus 500. He's the first Mexican with 500 career hits.
Was he first?
Yeah.
And I'm Mexican.
Not the first?
I thought it was like third.
Maybe. I thought Beltre was.
Is Beltre Mexican?
I thought so.
He was Cuban.
Maybe. No way.
Not
this,
great.
This is not going to age well. I'm glad I'm going on vacation tomorrow.
Jeez.
Don't Google it.
I was wrong. He's not Cuban, but he's not Mexican. He's Dominican.
All right. At least we were both wrong.
Anyways, Isak became another Mexican with 500 career hits, which is a lot more than my two.
That sounded way worse.
I have two career hits in my highest level of baseball, which maybe half of them are only counted to the Mexican side. So I'm like 499 away from Isak.
You'll get there.
I think I'll get there.
One day at a time.
All right, so that one's voided. We're not going to give you Isak.
I'll be honest. Like I know they lost the series this weekend. I don't think it was that bad of a weekend overall.
I just hate the way they lost Friday.
For sure. And that's why it was the lead one. But it's... Friday, they should have won Friday. Yesterday, you're facing one of the best pitchers in baseball this season, and they won on Saturday. Like, I just didn't think it was that bad of a weekend, honestly, for the Astros. I'd hate to be any kind of, like, forgiving for a serious loss, but it could have been so much worse, honestly.
Yeah. All right, so you're done with yours.
Yeah.
Brian, what'd you say your stat was on Isak Paredes?
Me?
Yeah.
I thought he was the first Mexican with 500 hits.
10th.
Oh, wow. I just missed the zero.
Yeah, that's
it was just a decimal problem.
Usually we add zeros like on the show. You subtract zeros.
It was like Office Space. I forgot the decimal.
Vinny Castilla has the most.
Oh, Vinny Castilla, awesome! He had the best hair ever. Vinny Castilla hair was Lego Man hair, and it was perfect. I love Vinny Castilla so much.
Adrian Gonzalez is up on the list.
Oh yeah. Yeah, was he Mexican born?
That's what it says.
I didn't realize Adrian Gonzalez was Mexican. I thought he was Mexican but born in America. Anyways, what's your bad? You're ugly, Brian.
Oh, my bad. We mentioned Abreu and Jake's arm. DeCenzo we mentioned. The rest is just the offensive numbers of the guys that didn't come through. Obviously, Yordan 2-for-11 in the series. Three strikeouts yesterday. I mean, everyone struggles with the heat from the Miz, but Yordan seemed to really struggle with the heat from the Miz. Like, seemed like he wasn't catching up to not just Miz. I forget the closer's name.
Miguel.
It wasn't catching up to him either.
Trevor Miguel. That's where you can beat Yordan. It's hard to do it, but where you can beat Yordan is with high cheddar. Now, it's tough to do because not everybody throws in the upper 90s, and in Miz's case, in the triple digits.
Yeah, the low hundreds.
It's harder to get a It's not hard to get a fastball up, but it's hard to trust yourself to get a fastball up to Yordan, right? Like, he's one of the most feared hitters in all of baseball. I'm like, okay, let me throw cheese, and I'm going to try to beat him at the top of the zone. Mm-hmm. Easier said than done. But if you look at just, like, pros and cons of a hitter or, like, where can you get this hitter out, Yordan's where can you get him out is fastball up. Preferably in as well. And yeah, he did have a rough weekend with velocity. And the Brewers are one of the rare pitching staffs and one of the few pitching staffs, especially with the Miz, that are able to do that against Yordan. But he did struggle with it. You're right.
Yeah, I mean, he's not going to be perfect all the time.
That's where you beat them. Like if I were designing a game plan against Jordan, and it depends on who's pitching. But if I have a guy who can throw an upper 90s fastball, okay, we're going high. We're going high with our heat, preferably on the inside half. And if he can beat us there, tip the cap.
Yeah, I wonder if it's a lot of teams are scared to still do it because they don't trust their guys to get it in the right spot.
I think it's tough for a pitcher to trust his stuff to do it.
Yeah.
That guy's the most feared hitter in baseball, and I'm going to try to beat him with a fastball high and in.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't get, and if I miss by a fraction of an inch, it's going to go 450 feet.
Yeah.
It's easier said than done. It's tough to execute it.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, Christian Walker also two for 13 in the series, not good. And just overall, Taylor Trammell being a cleanup hitter. I know he's had a good run here the last month or so, but just the idea of him being a cleanup hitter, not an ideal lineup.
No, not an ideal lineup, but I think he's been good. So it's tough to – yeah, I know he's 0-4 yesterday, but that was with the miss, so we're kind of just throwing everything out there. He did have a hit in the first two games of the series.
Do you think they'll keep that going with Paredes? With Trammell and then Paredes in the lineup?
I think Joe loves to do the lefty-righty thing. I think he learned that from Dusty.
I get it, but I'm kind of with Brian. Like I find it so strange to put Trammell in that position. I'd rather have that be Paredes.
Well, Trammell's been swinging a hotter bat.
He has been.
Up until yesterday.
Yeah, he has been. But we talked about it on Friday. We like Trammell. But I still feel like having Paredes behind Walker is still the better thing to do. But if you're going to go the lefty-righty thing, I do get why. That's the choice they make. It's just I'm not a huge fan of it.
Well, I mean, Altuve seems like he's going to be back pretty soon.
Yeah.
So, one, I hope they're not rushing it. I hope he's not rushing it. Secondly, I wonder what the lineup looks like after that. I imagine they would go Peña, Altuve, Yordan, but I kind of like what I'm seeing with Peña hitting in front of Yordan. But then whoever's hitting behind Yordan has to be Walker, in my opinion. I wouldn't hate if they went Peña, Yordan, Walker, and then I don't really care. Isak, Altuve, don't really care.
Would you have any consideration of Altuve at the top?
Yes. I don't like Altuve at the top.
Okay.
He doesn't get on base enough.
Yeah. I just to keep Peña in front of Yordan.
I think I want Peña, Yordan. This is the first time I've thought about this. I think I want Peña, Yordan. My rules here are, and you know how I feel about the whole batting order stuff. I think they're largely overrated. Preferably, I would love Yordan cleanup. I'm not sure you can do it with this team because I'm not sure you have the depth with this team like to protect him. My two rules that I want, Christian Walker needs to protect Yordan because he's your second-best offensive player, so he needs to be hitting directly behind Yordan. And I think that the guy who can really spark you and can really catch fire is Peña, so mm-hmm. I'd like him to get the protection of Yordan. So I think I would just go Peña, Yordan, Walker, and then I don't really care what you do after that.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same spot. If Altuve's back and ready to, I think you're right. The question here is, are they rushing him? Because I think it's even a little surprising that they're just letting him do things in Florida and then with the team. And it seems like he's not going to do a rehab stint. He's just going to come back.
Yeah, he's going to rehab at the big league level.
Okay. We talked about that last week, like the advantage of doing it and not doing it. Normally, this is not something we see the Astros do. Maybe Altuve just doesn't want to spend any time in Sugarland or Corpus Christi.
Probably, I mean, I don't blame him.
He's just like, I'm just gonna be with the big league club.
He probably doesn't want to spend money on the spread, you know, because you got if you're a big you league,
you're cheap.
Yeah, he likes to say, and not call him cheap and call him frugal. You know, you're a big leaguer and you go make a rehab assignment. You're supposed to buy the whole club a spread.
Do you have to do it every day or just one time?
I don't know how they do it.
Okay,
I'm not sure how often. I've never been in a big league clubhouse. But they do it.
Josh Hader hasn't been by dinner every day for the last.
I think he has the day he pitches.
Really?
I'm pretty sure. I think it's like the days you play. So, like, whenever Hader's been pitching, I think Hader, and they're all know when he's going to pitch that day. So, like, Hader, I think when he's been pitching, he buys the spread.
Interesting.
Starter goes down there. Okay, I'm buying the spread tonight. It's my game. But okay. As a position player, I think they do.
Dang. If you're down there for a while, that can get pricey. If you do like five games, that's five straight dinners?
I mean, Altuve's making $30 million a year.
It still adds up. A little bit.
I mean,
if it adds up, you're spending your money otherwise very poorly.
Yeah. Like, what are you running here to spread a minor league team?
So, what, 25 guys plus coaches, call it 40?
Call it 40 players, maybe $100 a head if it's a really nice place, which Hader is going like sushi and steaks.
So that's what I figured. Like,
let's call it 5,000. Let's round it up. Yeah. Let's call it 5 grand. I mean, if he's doing.
Yeah, he's got a $95 million contract.
That's nothing.
He's all right.
Yeah. Do you go nice dinner every time?
No, you can't do it every time.
Okay.
Because you got a budget.
Yeah.
I mean, you also just ask the guys what they want.
I wonder how Dave Ramsey feels about this. Let's try to call into Dave Ramsey and be like, should these big league ball players, we should call Dave Ramsey pretending we're Jose Altuve.
That has the potential to sound racist.
No. And we just, I don't think Dave Ramsey would know who Jose Altuve is.
We could pretend to be Hunter Brown.
Like, I make $30 million a year. I'm going to the minor leagues. It's customary to like buy the spread.
Yeah.
What should I be buying them, Dave? He'd be like, well, it doesn't matter. Just don't spend a credit card. You know, spend your cash. That's what he would say in his pouty face.
Maybe one day's Chick-fil-A, one day steaks.
I think they do have cheap days. Because like these guys who are on minor league rehabs that are like, you know, like Spencer Arrighetti, he's probably going to like Texas Roadhouse. You know?
Yeah.
Like he's probably not going to a steakhouse and getting them, you know, tomahawks.
If Arrighetti were to get hurt this year. Because he started the year in the minors, I think he should be exempt from this.
Oh, if you start the year in the minors, huh?
I feel like if you're kind of going, if you have any version of a back and forth.
He's also pre-arb, so he's not making the big money.
Yeah. No, if you don't make big money, I don't think you should be going like to these elite places. Like, hey, I mean, they'd be happy with, you know, they'd be happy with Texas Roadhouse University. Brian be happy about that, his alma mater.
Yeah, exactly.
They'd be happy with Spring Hill Barbecue. You know what I mean? Spring Creek. I knew that didn't sound right. Yeah. It's fine.
Yeah,
no big deal. McDonald's, maybe. I don't know.
I think they might turn their nose up at that.
Chipotle?
I feel like Chipotle
has a chance to make the game a problem.
Well, this is why you're doing it after the game. You're not doing it pregame. It's not a pregame spread.
All right.
You're not giving them sushi in pregame. Although it's not a terrible pregame meal, unless the fish didn't really sit with you. Junkie says, I know it's outrageous to say, but we went on a win streak when Altuve went out. That's not outrageous to say. Altuve's not had a good offensive season. I don't think that they're related. But, I mean, Jose Altuve hasn't been great outside of the first 2 weeks of the season. All right, 713-780-ESPN. Did you have any more bads, Brian?
No, that was it.
The only other bad that I had that you guys didn't mention, Mariners have won 6 games in a row.
Yep.
The Astros are now 4.5 games back in the division. Only other bad that I had. Let's get to the good side of things, because we're an optimistic show that always has smiles on our faces. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP, listener line, 713-780-3776. It's Jeremy and Joe on ESPN 97.5. Oh, you got to get out there. It's June, baby. It is June. You know what June is? It's Two Creeks Crossing Resort Month. Escape the rat race for the weekend, the hustle and bustle of the job, traffic, whatever causing you stress, and get out there to Two Creeks Crossing Resort on Lake Livingston. Escape the city. It's just 90 minutes from Houston, too, so it's not going to take you long to escape. An hour and a half. You can leave at 3, turn us on. You're on at our halftime. Halfway through our show, you're already there. And you're going to be hiking their 92 acres of property in the second half of our show. You're going to be kayaking their Two Creeks. Maybe you want to fish in their Two Creeks. Some of the best fishing in Texas. They got pickleball courts for you. They got the they have swampers there, just kind of a little dive bar. You go have a drink. You can have take the drink to the pool. Maybe you want to go to Blue Bayou Bend. Blue Bayou Bend is a month old and it is awesome. Blue Bayou Bend is great. Lazy River is fantastic. You're going to love your time. So they got the water park, open green spaces, wildlife, beautiful, majestic trees, some of the best fishing in Texas. You cannot beat it. And they got all the stays you want, too. They got glamping for you, waterfront cabins right on the creeks. They got a tree house. You walk up the steps, you're right there perched in the tree. Or if you already have an RV, pull up the RV. They have the perfect RV hookup spots for you. And they're always taking care of their visitors, too. They believe in Southern hospitality. Weekend activities every single weekend. Father's Day weekend coming up on the 19th and the 20th. Live music every single weekend as well. They got the food trucks out there, so you don't have to cook either if you don't want. It is fantastic. What are you waiting for? Get out there to Two Creeks Crossing Resort this summer. You're going to love it. Book your stay now. TwoCreeksCrossingResort.com. That's TwoCreeksCrossingResort.com.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
We're taking a break.
Okay. That's cool.
Jeremy and Joe
on ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
Broadcasting live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Jeremy Branham and Joe George.
Our only sweats of the day that we have an option to do here are the first inning runs that you mentioned. You could there was two options. Because the Tigers and Rays start at 5:40, Marlins and Nationals start at 5:45. So we have two games that we can play. First inning run. is what we'd have to do. Detroit, Tampa Bay. Detroit has Ty Madden on the mound. I want to say he's a Longhorn. And then Griffin Jacks is on the mound for Tampa. Converted reliever, starter, has been pretty good. Doesn't go deep into games, only has one decision on the year. Will there be a first inning run on that is minus 112 for yes, minus 120 for no.
Okay.
Second game that we have is Marlins Nats. Sandy Alcantara is on the mound for the Marlins. Hadn't been very good. And then Cavalli is on the mound for the Nationals. Been pretty solid. The value there, first inning run, minus 115, yes, minus 115, no. They really cook you on these props, by the
way.
They
do.
They really cook you on the props. I hate betting these because they cook you on the props. But those are our four options.
I lean.
You don't like anything?
No on Tigers Rays.
Like no run?
Yeah, no run.
I was going to say no on the Nationals and Marlins.
Should we just do both?
Yeah, let's do both.
Why not?
All right, we'll do both. So we're on no first inning runs in both of those two games. And we're surrendering value here, but who cares? We had a big week last week. Minus 120 on the Rays game, minus 115 on the Marlins-Nationals game. That's where we're on. And we might bookshop here during the break. My bookshop during the break. See if we can make those odds a little bit better. Anyway, 713-780-ESPN. Hit me with your first good, Joe.
I'll go back to just mainly on Friday because it didn't really continue too much over the weekend. But Jeremy Peña, he just looks much better at the plate. Overall,
oh, yeah.
I mean, obviously the home run pop has been there the last couple games. Friday, you know, the 2 days before Friday as well. It's been a really slow start to the season for him. But as we talked about with protecting Yordan Alvarez in front of him with Peña, behind him with Christian Walker, seeing this version of Peña, not that he's going to be popping home runs left and right, but I think that to me is one of the biggest positives out of this weekend is the continued, you know, good at bats from Peña.
Yeah, I think you can unlock Jeremy Peña with Yordan hitting behind him, so I'm not moving that. I'm with you on Peña. I had that as well. Peña finding his groove again. Love what I'm seeing from him. Playing good defense. I have a hair in my eye. But you can't. I just to me, you're going to kind of screw him up if you put Altuve behind him. Like you cannot. You start to find fire with Peña. Because Yordan's protecting him. If you were to sandwich Altuve in the middle of the two, I would not be happy.
What's the point?
Not going to be happy about it. If you even your idea, I prefer better. Even if you go Altuve, Peña, Yordan, yeah. I would prefer that way more. The only real rule I have with Altuve coming back at some point, I don't think it's going to be tomorrow, is that I need a three-hitter span in a row. I need three guys in a row of Peña, Yordan, Walker. It could be 2-3-4. It could be 3-4-5. It could be 1-2-3. I just need those three guys in order because I like the feng shui of that. Yordan protecting Peña. Walker's your best option to protect Yordan.
Yeah, I think putting Altuve in there would be... I feel like Joe Espada's not going to do that.
I hope not.
But... you never know with him and what he's going to do with this lineup because it does feel like it's working so well. If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
You know, another reason that Altuve can continue to lead off or lead off now, he's not playing left field anymore.
That's true.
So he doesn't have to make the long run to the dugout before he's in
back.
He doesn't, I mean, it's a shorter run.
Yeah.
And he's got short legs, but it's a more difficult run from left. He doesn't have to sprint to the dugout like he was when he was playing left field leading off in the first inning at the Dyke.
Yeah, because that was a real excuse.
Yeah, especially when they were on the road and he led off the game without being on the field at all.
Because I'm sure no left fielders ever led off.
No, never.
Yeah. Such a big lie.
Altuve was the first one.
Yeah, the greatest leadoff man of all time played most of his games in left field. And who is that guy?
P. Rose?
No.
Tony Gwynn?
No.
Ricky?
There you go.
Yeah.
The disrespect of Ricky Henderson.
Oh.
On the show.
I wasn't sure. I was thinking center field.
Love
for a
Ricky
day,
Henderson.
The greatest of all time.
Yeah. Good pull on that one. What other goods you got, Joe?
Tatis Imai.
He's really good, man.
Yeah. The last three starts obviously have been good with a combined no-hitter mixed in. But that is a good Brewers lineup. And he goes out there six innings, going to give up two earned runs. The walk's down still. So finding the strike zone. Five strikeouts in this game through 110 pitches. Be honest with you, didn't know he had that. Like,
what do you mean? We argued about this the other day. These Japanese pitchers throw 120 a start.
We did?
Yes.
I don't remember arguing
because you're
about
like,
this.
I think he's a guy you have to pull after 80, 90 pitches. I'm like, no, Japanese pitchers throw 120 pitches.
I don't remember
they
arguing
throw once
about
a week. Yeah.
Let's go, Kuchi.
Yeah.
Wrong guy, Brian. But Imai, much, much better these last three times for rotation. And that continued in yesterday's game.
Of the three starts, and they've all been better. And he's giving me a reason for optimism, right? I'd be happy to be wrong about this. Three starts, 16 and two-thirds innings. His walks are down to six. He has struck out 12 with a 270 ERA in the 16.2.
Good.
Last three outings with 270 ERA. Don't look up his FIP. I don't like FIP, though, so I'm not going to sit here and be like, well, his FIP is terrible. I hate FIP. I think FIP's a stupid stat. But his FIP isn't good. But his ERA has been good. Last three starts have been good. He's still just fastball slider, but if you can do this, you know, you're not going to have this outing every night. But if you can be a solid starter with a two-pitch mix, whatever, I don't care. Just figure it out. No, he was good yesterday. He had a little Jose Lima, little, you know, brown thing on his right hip, which is always fun to see. So, yeah.
Santa?
Limber Santa.
I like him.
He's good.
I know. Like, did he get credit with the loss on Friday night? I think he did, which is stupid.
Oh, because he pitched in the 10th.
Yeah, that should not be a loss.
And no one really looks at win-loss anymore.
I know, but like, it just shouldn't count against you. But I like what we're seeing out of him out of the bullpen. He's made a good impression on me so far in his three appearances with the Astros. So I like him as well.
Limber Santa.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's fun. He's got a good personality, I feel.
Yeah, he seems like a guy that's going to be easy to root for.
Yeah.
On the Astros.
He's got like an Enoli Canoli personality with like, have you seen his Baseball Savant way too early?
No,
I've not. Three game sample, five innings pitched.
Is it good?
Yeah, it's bright red.
Okay.
Yeah. Don't look up at Emi's Baseball Savant. But Limber Santa's Baseball Savant, very, very nice.
Emi's is still pretty bad?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not great. But hey, we're happy with the results for him, no doubt about it. What else you got? Real quick. Emi on his start yesterday, I did want to mention this. The two runs he gave up, I did feel were kind of unlucky. Like the base hit by Andrew Vaughn, he kind of snuck it by Walker. Yep. So kind of a seeing eye single. Now, the home run he gave up was entirely his fault. Yes, it was a Crawford box special, but it was also a hanging slider that was left up in the top of the zone, top outer part of the zone, but still, he can't leave a slider there. And good hitters take advantage of that. Bowers did.
And then my last one I have here is outside of the Brian Abreu inning, the entire bullpen gave up zero earned runs.
Oh, well, I didn't realize
this
that.
Weekend. Because so, I guess because Santa doesn't get counted for
it. Yeah, it's an unearned run. Yeah.
It's an unearned run.
But, and then you have Hader coming back.
The
fireman.
Tomorrow.
The fireman's coming back.
Yeah, the bullpen has really figured it out collectively, it feels like, outside of Abreu. He's the only one that's just not unusable, but you don't want to use him in any meaningful situation.
He only had one outing in all of May where he gave up a run.
Yeah, but can't trust him in an important situation.
Shouldn't be used in leverage spots. I hope all the Joes in our lives learn that lesson.
I learned it.
AJ Blue Ball,
for sure.
To sidebar yours,
yeah.
Kind of, you know, bullet point to your, the relievers were very good. I love when relievers can go three innings. I love when the relievers can turn a mid-inning appearance into a late-inning appearance, basically. The fact that Blue Ball went three shutout innings in relief was awesome.
Yeah.
I love to have that sort of bridge. I mean, that's a weapon. I kind of wish Espada would use him as a guy that could do that, that can turn a game from the middle innings into the late innings just like that, use him every fourth day maybe. But that was really cool to see. Three shutout innings in relief, got you to the ninth, and then you slam the door.
Feels like Joe just doesn't quite know how he wants to use him yet.
I love him in this role.
I'm good with this role.
And look, you know, maybe he's not cruising on an outing where you can't make it through the three and you have to list him after an inning and two-thirds or whatever. But I think the vision should be, okay, AJ Blue Ball is going to be our long relief weapon, not just some, like, mop-up guy. I'm talking about a long relief weapon that can come in and get you out of the sixth inning and then all of a sudden can finish the seventh and the eighth, and then here's Josh Hader in the ninth.
Yeah.
I think that's the weapon for AJ Blue Ball. That's how you really maximize his value.
Now, four of his last five appearances, he's pitched at least two innings.
Okay.
So maybe we're trending in that direction.
I don't want him to be in mop-up duty, though.
No.
I don't want him to be throwing two innings when they're down by six. I want him to be a weapon that's kind of like this multi-inning setup guy.
I do. It does kind of just like looking at them from a box score. I do think most of them were, you would probably call mop-up duty.
Don't want that.
He only got a hold in one of them, which is this last one. Well, I guess you have to go. No, you have to go three innings to do that. So maybe like they don't want to do him in leverage situations for two plus
innings.
Don't
like that.
But he's showing you can give length. Like he's obviously the start of the year was so bad with those early appearances, but he's been pretty good this year. So I think you're right. I think this is a better role for him. He's not going to be a one inning guy a lot. I think he's going to be more than that, which is what you're going to ask for him.
Yeah. No, I like him in that spot. Brian, what you got?
Oh, I mean, were you done?
Yeah.
We mentioned it in an earlier segment, but Paredes squaring up the Miz three times, including, again, a stat so crazy it bears repeating, but the first extra base hit allowed by the Miz in like a month and a half. It's crazy, and that went to Isak Paredes. Hit him twice hit him hard two other times, but unfortunately routes. The other ones, look, Jake's arm is puny, but I thought he made a great diving catch yesterday to Rob Terang, and he had five hits including a hit in every game, so I thought his bat was good. And then another
he's the best center fielder on this team. Like, people are always so quick to bench Jake Myers. He gives you your best chance to win in center field most days. Like, well, he needs to play the kids. He needs to play Bryce Matthews over Jake Myers.
No,
Bryce might have like a brighter future to be determined. But who gives you a better chance to win a baseball game today? It's Jake.
It's definitely Jake.
It's just his arm.
Yeah.
His arm is so bad. But like, you can afford it in center field.
You can be frustrated with the fact that Jake Myers is still, I think, the center fielder on this team. Like, you wanted the Astros to find a way to upgrade at some point over the last two seasons. But as this roster constructed, he's definitely the best center fielder on this
team. Best center fielder on this team.
Yeah.
And look, maybe you don't play him against some tough righties certain days. There's ways where you don't have to play him every single day. But Jake Myers is the best center fielder on this team. People are very quick to try to, this guy's a bum. This guy's no good. He has his limitations, as everybody does, and his are magnified and glaring. But he's the best center fielder on this team.
Last thing, just another bullet point for the bullpen. But Okert's two innings on Friday, pretty good there, scoreless. Bullpen was fantastic this weekend.
Free agent at the end of the year.
Keep him.
I wouldn't mind it.
Pay him Rafael Montero money.
No, stop it.
Go on vacation.
Goodness. Way to ruin the subject. Way to ruin all the fun. The only other one I would add on to you guys that y'all didn't mention, the Lambert going through five innings of two-run baseball and kind of gutted through that. I didn't think he was very good. But for the way he pitched to all of a sudden finish five innings and only give up two runs, I thought was admirable. I thought his line score was better than his actual eye test,
sure.
Which I think that's some gut. I think that's some determination, some grit. So give Lambert, which feels like his last couple of starts have been pure grit, which is fine. And then the other good, lost the series, but still only 2.5 games back of the wild card.
I guess the Mariners are
chase the fight.
What is this guy talking about?
I wasn't paying attention.
He was thinking about how far back they were, the Mariners.
I was doing, Joe, I was making a whole full circle moment. One of my bads was their games back in the division, and one of my goods was their game back in the wild card.
Yep. Confirm that.
Joe's head's in Orlando.
Now, the one thing that is kind of, I wouldn't call it disturbing, but just like, oh, you need to know this, is there are a lot of teams between the Astros and that final wild card spot. I think there's 5 or 6. So 2.5 games, but there's a lot of teams that you have to jump, which still June 1st, lots of baseball still to be played. 713-780-ESPN, Eric the Buyer, Friday's choke, ugly, Abreu and dropping the series bad. Isak has the best ojos in the league. Good. Yeah. He has very good holes. He sees a lot of pitches, that Isak Potatoes. All right, it's a couple of trades in the NFL. Myles Garrett has been traded to the Rams. We'll discuss. And then also another trade just went down. A.J. Brown going to the Patriots. We'll tell you what the Patriots got. And we'll react to him, of course. It's Jeremy and Joe on ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5.
Now back to the Huntington Bank Studios with Jeremy Branham and Joe George.
On ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
He's Joe. I'm Jeremy. 713-780-ESPN. So two trades in the NFL today. The first one that hit the wire earlier today. Les Snead doing naughty things with his first-round draft picks. Trading his first-round draft pick next year, Jared Verse, two other draft picks, to Cleveland, and they get back the best edge rusher in the NFL. And Myles Garrett.
Monster trade. Yeah. I mean, it ends up being a 28 second and a 29 third. That's what the other picks were when it finally got all reported. The Myles Garrett thing, it felt like it picked up some heat over the weekend, like kind of out of nowhere again. And now the Rams go out here and just they say bleep them picks.
Yeah.
It's absurd. They've had three first round picks since 2016. They've traded two of those guys.
The other is Ty Simpson.
The other is Ty Simpson.
Yeah.
Like, they had Goff, they traded him. They had Jared Verse, they traded him. Like, I think this move is, they were already the betting favorite to win the Super Bowl. They've moved, the odds have changed again, making them, I think it's plus 650 now, is the last I saw, to win the Super Bowl this year. This is an incredible trade for them.
Imagine if they would have actually taken a real player with the 13th pick. They'd probably be even better chance to win it all.
So I saw some people speculating. I don't know if I would call it reporting that these discussions started back during the draft, and that the theory is that they knew they weren't going to have a first next year either, so they just took the swing at the quarterback now, so they could lock that part up as they get ready to trade their 27 pick.
I don't know if I was the betting favorite to win the Super Bowl and I knew I was getting Myles Garrett, I think I'd probably try to draft somebody that's going to help now.
I kind of get why they did it though, because like they clearly like they don't care, like, they don't care about first. They've only taken three players since 2016 with first.
Yeah, but it, like to Jeremy's point, if the goal is to win the 2026 Super Bowl, how much does Ty Simpson help you for that?
It doesn't.
Yeah, take another defensive player. I know they traded for two corners, so they locked that up prior to the draft. Lincoln. Yeah, exactly. Take anything but a quarterback that's not close to the field.
Yeah, it's just I think they're just setting themselves up for what their mind is that when they have Myles Garrett still locked under contract and all these guys that Ty Simpson's going to be able to take over in 2 years, in 2028, and just keep the ball rolling.
It just feels like one of those, okay, we're going to talk out of both sides of our mouths.
It does a little bit.
We're going to do one thing for the future, and then we're going to do all of the other stuff for the immediate and the right now.
But isn't the quarterback the one area where like that would be – that's more okay to make sure you're locked up at quarterback long term?
You better be good.
Oh, he has to be.
He better be very good.
Yeah, we're waiting 2 years, 2.5 years, basically, to grade this trade out.
And they win it all. They win it all despite taking Simpson. If they win it all despite taking Simpson, who cares about the immediate? They just won it all.
Yeah.
So, like, they could make me eat crow by winning it all. Well, look, we didn't need to make a win now draft pick at 13 because we won it all anyways. Okay, you got me. I concede. You're the winner there. So they need one of two things to happen. They need either Ty Simpson to be really good once he takes over, or they need to win it all before Ty Simpson takes over. And then if they do either one of those things, I'll concede that. Either one of those things, and I think it's I will be wrong.
Yeah.
And, I will admit defeat.
And obviously in their perfect world, they're going to do both those things.
And if you do both, then they're brilliant.
You win a Super Bowl and you have a quarterback.
And then they're absolutely brilliant. I don't hate this trade for Cleveland, though.
I don't either.
I know that they're losing the better player, but they're also a team that like isn't anywhere close to being a contender. Jared Versus, I think that he is a fixture at one of your edge positions for the next 7 years. He's only 25 years old, 26 years old next year. You add all of this future capital for a guy who's the best edge rusher in the NFL, but getting older for a team that's not contending. I think this is a very good trade for Cleveland.
Yeah, and not having a bet at all on just drafting well to get the proven commodity, a guy who last year had more pressures, didn't obviously have the sack numbers that Myles Garrett had, but had more quarterback pressures last season than Myles Garrett had. You've set yourself up to replace Garrett easily, or to a certain degree.
Yeah, you have a starting edge. For a starting edge,
and and then you have other you have a first, a second, and a third in the next three drafts because of it. Now they might be the last pick of each round, potentially for at least the next two of them.
We shall see.
But it's very possible they're at least going to be in the late 20s the next 2 years.
I like this trade for both sides.
Yeah, I don't think there's a loser in this deal.
No, I like this trade for both sides. It's a win-win for me. Assuming both players stay healthy and all of that.
I also like this, just localize it, this trade for the Texans, because it's only one game, but it takes Myles Garrett off your schedule.
You could also I saw someone do this on the internet. I forget who they were, so my bad for not giving you proper credit. That's a good one. I hadn't thought of that angle. That's very good. The other angle is now Will Anderson's the best edge rusher in the AFC.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Defensive player of the year.
If you like bragging. Oh, well, no. It's NFL.
That's all NFL. Yeah.
But if you like bragging rights. There you go. You got the best edge rusher in the AFC now.
Houston, they definitely Texans. Do.
The second trade, and this is one that, like, the worst kept secret in the NFL. The Eagles are trading A.J. Brown to the Patriots for a 2028 first-round draft pick and then a 27 fifth-round pick, whichever one's better of the New England's two fifths. So New England has two fifths. Whichever one becomes better is the one that the Eagles are getting. So they get a first in 28, they get a fifth in 27, and the Patriots get a headache.
Yeah, I think... Who's the winner of this deal?
I mean, I like the Eagles side of things because of what they have.
Yeah.
Like, they have people don't. I view A.J. Brown much differently than most. I don't view A.J. Brown as a top 10 receiver. People think I'm nuts whenever I say that, but A.J. Brown hasn't had a top 10 receiver season for quite some time. I think. I mean, it's kind of how I feel about the other trade. It makes sense for both sides. Like, Patriots need a receiver. He's very clearly, easily, even though I don't think he's a top 10 receiver in the NFL, easily their top target now. Easily. Like, last year, their best receiver was Booty, you know?
I mean, Diggs had 1,000 yards.
Diggs was all right, but he was kind of an inside guy.
And they replaced Diggs with Romeo Doubs, but obviously that can never be their one.
And I don't hate Pop Douglas.
Yeah.
Like, Booty was their best deep threat last year. Brown's way better than Booty. Now, I'm a little surprised that the Eagles didn't get Booty back for this. Like, I would have preferred to have Booty as opposed to one of these, the fifth-round pick.
You think that? See,
maybe the Patriots said no to it.
Yeah. Like, if I'm the Patriots.
Booty's, like, holding out, though, not going to OTAs because he, like, knows that they were trading for A.J. Brown. So he's, like, disgruntled and unhappy.
But maybe
you're right. Maybe the Patriots are like, well, screw you. We like you. You're going to be here, whether you like it or not. Which, cool. I'm in favor of that. If the Patriots end up moving on from Booty, I would kind of ding the Eagles a little bit for not taking Booty back. Because I think Booty would make sense for them. Because you have, you know, two smaller-ish guys in the Slim Reaper. Then you have Lemon, who's not the biggest dude. Wicks, like, whatever. Booty would be, like, their biggest body receiver.
Yeah,
what I really like, though? Booty. Brian was just waiting.
I think it took a little bit.
I mean, honestly, that quote is about Kayshawn Booty.
It is.
It's literally about Booty. I'm nothing but not consistent.
I definitely think this, you know, does make the Eagles worse.
I don't know.
You think, like,
and you're so down on AJ Brown.
I don't think it makes them better. Like, obviously, it doesn't make them better. They lose a good receiver and they get nothing back this year. But I mean, AJ Brown was just like, he's all right. You know how many major stats AJ Brown's ever led in his entire career?
I'm guessing it's not many.
It's zero.
Okay.
Like, people talk about this dude as, like, one of the best receivers in the NFL. Maybe not that high, but, like, top 10 receiver. He's never led the NFL in receptions. He's never led the NFL in receiving yards. He's never led the NFL in receiving touchdowns. And everybody's like, oh, yeah, let's crown A.J. Brown. And I get that he hasn't played with top-notch quarterbacks. That didn't stop Andre Johnson. That didn't stop DeAndre Hopkins.
No, I definitely think that's why he's not, like, in that elite category, because he doesn't produce to that level consistent. Like, he has big games. He would have these monster games for the Eagles, and then he kind of would be quiet for 2 weeks. Like this is a good trade for A.J. Brown being
I think
in
his
New
numbers
England.
Go up.
I think from a football...
I would agree.
Like, I think big picture, it's also a good trade for the Eagles, because if he's unhappy and...
Actually, I don't know if they
the
go
book
up.
And everything, like...
I don't know if they go up.
I think they just kind of
from
flatten out?
I think they're equal. Last year, he had 78 catches, 1,003 yards, 7 touchdowns. Yeah. I don't think he's going to be better
than
that.
Not the receptions. I agree with you there. He's never been, even at his best, a high reception total guy, but from 1,003 yards, I think that goes up.
I don't know.
I would bet he's north of 1,100. We have a wager?
Wager?
I need to see his prop numbers first.
All right, that's fine. Yeah. You got time.
He's getting older. He's going to be 29.
Yeah, just
game like script. Patriots like to run the ball. They're probably going to be leading.
It's kind of I don't know what the cause is, or is he going on the downside? But, I mean, it's hard for me to separate. Okay, yeah, his numbers are down, but the Eagles have also been one of the lowest passing volume teams in the league.
Where do the Patriots rank? Because I wouldn't, just off the top of my head, I wouldn't think they're very
high. I'd have
high.
To look
more
it
than
up,
the Eagles,
I
sure. Like, just eyeballing it, we would all agree more than the Eagles. But
yeah,
not.
I would guess they're mid.
Mid, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I would think, too.
Yeah, it looks like... So the Eagles, yeah, they ran it 49% of the time. The Patriots last year ran it 49.6% of the time.
Also, so can be a little misleading depending on how many plays they run a game.
Yeah,
and the
Patriots' schedule was obviously pretty weak last year.
Yeah.
So like
historically weak,
late.
Yeah. So they're going to be up.
The Patriots will be better next year because of this trade. Eagles will be, I think, the same. I don't think it's going to impact the Eagles at all. I really don't.
I think it's marginal. Like, I think the headache... It just makes it easier to deal with. Just like, all right, see you, dude. I think the fact that they got a first when everyone knew they wanted to get rid of him.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting they went 28 first.
Well, it's probably the hang up. The Patriots probably, we're not giving you 27 first. We'll give you 27 second. Eagles probably, well, give me a 28 first. Okay. That sounds like a compromise.
Is Mike Vrabel the coach of the Patriots in 2028?
I feel like he's a better, yeah, of course.
Okay.
If he was going to be fired, he'd be fired by now.
Yeah, I mean, if he went 4-13, okay, maybe.
Yeah, I think there's
outside of that.
If he finishes the 2027 season, I think he's got a better chance to be the head coach in 28 than he does right now being the head coach in 27.
Yeah.
Makes sense?
Yeah, no, I agree with you.
Yeah, he's the coach there. They give him a rousing applause, that little donor thing. They have the biggest pervert owner in the NFL.
They do.
Like, this is like, he probably got a high five and a, you know, slap on the butt whenever he came back into the office.
Probably.
All right, 713-780-ESPN. Western Conference Finals. We have a new champion in the West. We're going to have a new champion in the NBA. What do we make of Game 7 in the West over the weekend? 713-780-3776. Jeremy and Joe, ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5.